Well, we've been continuing our series with kind of the beginning of public education in America and some of the personalities of the people. I spent a little too much time talking about some of the other things. We're going to start getting into some of the people now this Sunday and next Sunday, try to cover a few of them. I've got about two or three more that we'd like to cover. We started talking about Horace Mann last week, and he's known as the father of public education there in that Boston, Massachusetts region. We discussed some things here just by way of review, that he was involved in politics in Massachusetts for several years and then really taught for a year or two. It was a terrible, terrible teacher. And as we kind of pointed out, sometimes people that are really bad at doing that just continue to stay in those positions. Or, you know, who do we want to be the first secretary of the State Board of Education? That guy. He was the worst teacher in the history of humanity. We're going to put him in charge of the State Board of Education. And it's really kind of the way the government operates, I guess, sometimes. But he was chosen in 1837 to do that. And of course, since he didn't know anything about education, he gave himself a crash course. And he went to the American Journal of Education, or the Journal of American Education, that had recently began and was really one of the prominent authors there, William McClure, a very liberal guy who wrote a lot of liberal ideas into that journal. And so this is where Horace Mann went to get all his ideas to start public education. And we also dealt with not only those ideas, but also that country, that region of Prussia, and how that began to be an influence as well. And I wanted to kind of get into that today. We went over these few things the other day that, you know, Prussia, what happened was they were defeated by Napoleon. And so they began to go back and say, what in the world happened? Why did we so easily give up in defeat? And they began to analyze the people. And they said, you know what? The people in Prussia did not emphasize the state enough. It was kind of like when the pressure came, they were like, okay, we don't care about nationalism. We don't care about having our country. We just want to be protected. We don't care. We'll give up. Napoleon, do what you want to do. And so Prussia fell because the people really didn't unite together for the nation. There was no sense of patriotism, no sense of nationalism, which, you know, that's a good thing to have, by the way. You know, I believe in patriotism. I believe in a sense of, not in an extreme sense, but a sense of nationalism and a good sense of pride in the nation that we have. You know, we ought to be proud that we have this nation, not in a bad, evil way, but that, you know, the Lord's given us this liberty and freedom in this nation. It's one of the things we teach here in our school is American patriotism. We want them to love and appreciate the flag, and we have the flags in the classrooms, and we say the Pledge of Allegiance. We stand every morning with our hand over our heart, and we say the Pledge of Allegiance. I know that's probably frowned upon, and it's one nation under God, and that's what we teach our young people. People may get upset about that or think we're being racist or xenophobic or whatever words they throw out for the weirdest things, but, you know, we want them to understand that this nation was truly a gift from the Lord. Here's the Pilgrims and the Puritans in the 1600s. They were being persecuted for, you know, not wanting to align themselves with the Church of England, which was technically the Catholic Church, but just under the King of England, basically the same thing. And they couldn't do this and couldn't do that and couldn't worship freely and were being put in prison. And they said, forget this. We want someone we can worship freely. So they came to this land. And I don't care how you rewrite history or how you rethink things, that was the reason. And so it was a biblical foundation that they desired. Was everything perfect? No. Were there problems and struggles? Yes, of course. But then they looked at biblical principles when they, you know, they struggled with should we separate from England or not. They struggled with that. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to go do what we want to do. No, they struggled because they knew that they were under that authority and it was a hard decision for them. But when it came to their liberties being violated, they stood against that. And they established this nation, and the Constitution is truly a masterpiece of a document. The things, the research that they went through, and you think about how that document, even to establish things that were off into the future that they didn't even know were going to happen. I mean, the balance of the powers and the three branches of government, that comes from the Bible, by the way. There's Bible verses that talk about that. Law and justice and, you know, executive and all those things, they're there. And they researched those things and they studied those things and they wrote them into the history of this country. And it's a wonderful nation that we have. And we ought to teach our young people that this is what the Lord's given us. And for these past centuries, we've been having these freedoms and we've been able to preserve these freedoms. We ought to continue to do so. And it's not a sense of we're proud, we're America, we're the best thing in the world. No, we're not that way. But we're glad and thankful that we have a nation like this. And when we stop teaching that type of thing, we stop teaching patriotism and a good sense of nationalism, then we result in what we have today, where we believe that, you know, communism is better and socialism is better than what we have here in America with capital. You mean, old capitalists, all you want is greed. Well, sure, there's greed. That's sin in man's heart. But greed isn't because of capitalism. Greed is because of sin. They don't want to talk about sin, so they blame it on some capitalistic system where you wealthy people are blah, blah, blah. You know, hey, anybody in this country, and I tell the students this all the time, it's the beauty of America. You work hard enough, you'll get there. Anyway, that communism's great. I love seeing the pictures of here's Cuba or whatever, and it's just shambles. Here's Venezuela, destructo mode. Communism works. It works for the people that are in control. That's it. It doesn't work for it. We're here for the common man to help you. You're not helping anybody except putting money in your pocket. And when it gets bad and people start rioting, you skip town and they destroy themselves. Yeah, it's just wonderful. But here in our country so far, we've been blessed. And I tell the students this many times. You can go out and you can work hard. You can make a living. Well, I went pretty far off of Prussia, didn't I? What were we talking about? Prussia was disappointed that their people didn't have a sense of nationalism. And so they said, well, we can't have this. So what are we going to do? So they began to force things. They said, well, they concluded that the people have too much emphasis on themselves instead of the state. It should be all for the state. Now, I mean, I understand, you know, and you think about it. The people in the patriotism in America, I'm telling you, they want it. Give me liberty or give me death. Boy, that's something. And, you know, and as Nathan Hale was captured as a spy and they ended up hanging him? I can't remember. I think it was. I read the book and I can't remember. Secret Six, that's a pretty good book, by the way, about the Revolutionary War. And they're talking about, well, I'm going to die, you know, but we're going for liberty here, freedom. They gave their lives for this. And then we treat it like it's nothing. No big deal. You know, I've heard speeches and things of these local city councils. I don't know if any of you ever hear some. There's people that are all fired up. They're upset. So you're closing our businesses down over something that has a 99.96% survival rate. And I heard one man said, I went out and fought for this country. I've seen things that I don't ever want to see again. And then I come home and I can't even make a living for my family. You know, where's the liberty? We're just like, oh, just give it over. Blindly just following like a bunch of sheep. We haven't taught this generation. In general, overall, the public education system has failed this generation. We haven't taught them. Where's the World War II generation? There's risk. I'm not going. I tell you, I think back through that time. I'm going to tell you, that took guts. It scares me to think about. I'm sitting in a little U-boat going to the beach of Normandy. The gate drops and I'm dead. They did that for this country. And we're just scared. There's a risk. I heard a guy last night, he was all upset. He was a football coach. He said, y'all are kidding me. There's a 0.04% chance you're going to die. And the state shut down the football program because it's too much risk for the kids. He said, we got ambulances sitting outside the field because we're playing football. And you want to tell me about risk? We got people breaking arms and legs. We're scared. Now, I'm not undermining things. I know that people can get sick and die, but they can get sick and die from a lot of things. I'm just curious why all of a sudden all the panic. But where's World War II people? Those young men were signing up left and right. They said, we don't want that evil over here in our country. We're going to go get it. After 9/11, boy, that was 20 years ago. We've already forgotten, haven't we, in this country? People were signing up left and right to go fight that evil that flew them buildings into our airplanes. That's patriotism. Building into the airplanes. Yes. It's been a long night. I've only had 5 cups of coffee this morning. Brian, I should have stayed and drank that 6th cup of coffee, and I would have been good. Just don't tell my wife I drank that much. A little late for that. But, I mean, I think about Pat Tillman. Arizona State, great defensive linebacker, made it to the NFL, played for the Arizona Cardinals. Saw 9/11, said, this is crazy. Quit his football career, went into Special Forces. Died. Now that's a hero, not somebody that kneels for a flag. That's hero. That understands patriotism. And that's what we want to teach our young people. God has given us this country, and we're just giving it right back. We're just, yeah, whatever. Treat freedom like it's nothing. Because God's been merciful to give it to us for so long, but we haven't taught people what it means. And now we're going to pay the price. Well, here's what happened in Prussia. Again, I got to get back to this. We're never going to finish. People were emphasizing themselves and said to the state, so what do we got to do? We've got to educate the children that the state is all that matters. Now that, again, we want to teach patriotism, but they went way far. They went to the extreme and it became governmental control in the name of freedom. Don't you like how the government controls stuff in the name of fill in the blank? For safety, because there's risk. Let the government come in and take care of you and tell you exactly, step by step, what to do. Really? What risk? There's more risk driving down the interstate, 0.04%. Now, I'm not undermining anything, and I'm not, you know, but I'm sorry. People die from the flu every year. We don't see them published in the papers and huge news stories. Anyway, narratives and agendas. We got to move on. So we've got to train people to be loyal to the state at all costs. So here's some of the things they did. This is what they wanted. Obedient workers. No matter what, you do exactly what the state says to do in the factory or wherever you're working. Obedient soldiers. No matter what, you do it. Now, of course, you do want obedient soldiers and obedient workers. But they were taking it to an extreme. Subordinated government servants. Subordinated industry workers and like-minded citizens, which to them meant all for the state at all cost. And so they're going to teach children that the only thing that matters is the state. And the state's going to take care of you. And the state's going to do everything. Now, here's some of the things about Prussian education. Here's some of the things that were written. This author said, the school must fashion the person and fashion him in such a way that he simply cannot will otherwise than what you wish him to will. Now that's like robot. Whatever they say, I do, you know. That's, I'm telling you, just read that. You can't will otherwise than what the state wishes him to will. Now you think about that today. People are scared to death to do anything contrary to what the state says. You've got to think collectively. Don't be individualistic. What's your problem? We're going to get you. How dare you? This is the mindset. Destroy individualism. So the school became a means of propaganda to shape a person's thinking. And so Germany, as Mr. Opeger said, became a country, eventually turned in from Prussia, developed into Germany. Revere the government. Follow the government. And that's, again, Hitler came and it was right to him. Right to him. And then Hitler's like, kill the Jews, whatever he says to do. Take over the world, whatever he says to do. They were just convinced in their minds. You want to talk about brainwashed? They were convinced in their minds of these things. So here's how these things came over. Prussian education. What were some things in the education system of Prussia? I'm going to put them up quickly and we're going to talk about them. You need financial support for education via taxes. So you're going to tax the people, and you're going to take that tax money, and you're going to fund education so that everybody has to go, and the money's there to provide for it. Sound familiar? Where'd that come from, this? This is what Horace Mann drank up. And Everett, the governor of Massachusetts. They loved it. Compulsory attendance. Now, that means it's no longer an option, but you will be in school. They feared that somehow a child would be outside of the parameters of their control. You know what collective thinking is? It's the spirit of Antichrist. That, I know there's times for collective thinking, but you know what I'm saying? As a society, it's preparing for, where's the answer? Where's the answer? There he is, the Antichrist. the stage is setting, and it shouldn't cause fear in us because that means the Lord's going to come. We don't have to worry because we know how it's going to end. It's fearful on earth sometimes, it is. Don't get me wrong, but keep in mind, the Lord has already won. We're on the side of victory. And He's going to end all things according to His Word. And we've already seen it. We can read it. The devil in his mind still thinks he can somehow, he can still get it. He's going to be sorely disappointed. So compulsory attendance. You got to get them in there so they don't think for themselves. Well, I'm thinking the way the state says to think. They had truant officers. They still do. We can get in trouble as a Christian school if we don't have adequate attendance. I can't issue a credit in high school if I don't have adequate attendance. It's passing grade, adequate attendance. Now, of course, if you want to give a credit, obviously you want them to be in the class. I want them to be there and learn and earn. But, you know, we're going to go out and we're going to make sure that if those families refuse to send their kids to the government schools, we're going to get them. We're going to arrest the parents. Truant officers. They had punishments for parents. They'd fine them or punish them or put them in jail. They had graded classrooms. Now, don't misunderstand that it means formerly it was based on where they were academically. That's the way they did it before. Where's the academic levels? That's why kids that were 13 years old were going to Harvard. They were smart enough. They were the Michael Whitneys of the group that excelled in reading. Boom, they were done at 12 years old and they're off to Harvard. Well, we can't have that anymore. We got to have you stay with your age group. No opportunity to excel. That's where this came from. Call for a uniform curriculum. Uniform curriculum. Everybody learning the same thing. Now they're changing it. They're in a panic mode. How do we undo it? 2012. Hey, we'll give you this little tiny, tiny bit of money. $400 million. Yeah, divided by 50 states and how many counties? Yeah. And you're going to change your entire curriculum to match what the government says you should teach. Where'd that come from? Here. A couple hundred years ago. And Common Core was an absolute failure. And now states are trying to undo it. Florida's trying to undo it and things like that. I'm all for standards and what is an educational standard that we should meet. I'm for that. But this norm stuff and everybody's got to learn the exact same thing. Well, I tell you what, the problem with that is the government gets to dictate what that exact same thing is. I don't want my kids learning that evolution is true. It's a lie. And it's not a theory, by the way. It's a philosophy. It's a worldview that is anti-God, that diminishes and undercuts the power of the Creator. And Satan loves that. Because then you don't have accountability to anybody. And I tell you, it really irks me, the inconsistency. They hate, you know, racist. What do you think evolution is? Darwin was one of the biggest racists in the history of this world. He said it. Go read his books. Go read Descent of Man. He literally talks about the certain races of color and how they're the dearth of society that need to be, natural selection needs to weed them out in favor of the Aryan races. What do you think Hitler learned that from? We don't talk about that today. We just shove evolution down the kids' throats, but we don't associate the mean R word with it. We teach that God created mankind and we're all one blood. And we're created in the image of God. I don't care if you're purple, black, blue, whatever, polka dotted. I don't care. You're a human being in the image of God, and you're a unique creation. And you have a soul. You need to come to Christ and bow the knee. That's the need of every child and every human being in this earth. I don't care what color you are. Where did this all come from? Uniform curriculum. They're going to tell you exactly what to teach. They're going to tell you to teach it the way the government wants and spout out what the government says. And everything that goes along with it. And then this is a big one, state-trained teachers. We're going to talk about some people later. Where did these teachers learn this stuff? Oh, the Teachers College of Columbia, the greatest bastion of education known to man. Yeah. And the teachers that came out of there were full of Horace Mann, John Dewey, Counts, Owen, go on right down the line. We're going to talk about some of these people. Behaviorism, progressivism, all of it. no biblical philosophy whatsoever. None. So this is what Horace Mann, the great Secretary of the Board of Education in Massachusetts, this is Prussia in America, here are these things. Everett, the governor, Unitarian, denied the deity of Christ and all those things. He went over to Prussia to study what they were doing and got his doctorate there. Man, this is just wonderful. Look at what they're doing with education. Look at what they're doing with society here. And man, he was like, man, I got to get over there. And he said, well, this is wonderful. How can we get this into America? This is great. Remove the children from the parents and sell public education in the name of equality and collectivism. Like I said, they always like to do things in the name of something that makes you afraid to go against it. We're doing this for the safety of our children. Oh, you don't want our kids to be safe. How dare you? Oh, wait a minute. Let's look at facts. That, by the way, is the classic fallacy, Jared, we learned in physical science. When I call somebody a name instead of looking at the facts, do you even remember? What is it? He listened. I think it was because I probably went off on wild tangents in that class and gave a lot of examples. Ad hominem. We don't look at the facts. We just start calling people names. You ever notice that? Well, then why is he a racist? That's ad hominem. That's answering my argument by name calling because you don't know what else to say. Somebody's arguing, shut up, jerk. Can't we just have a conversation and discuss the facts and think? No. Oh, no. Not if you're going to go against an agenda. They're going to name call you. Of course, if you tried the ad hominem, they'll, I can't believe you over there. Just we tried to argue. You just called me mean names. No. What? Okay. Moving on. You can't reason with these people. You can't because there's no basis of logic. And you know why? Because for the past 200 years, we've eaten this stuff up in the public schools. And we've raised generations that don't know how to think. And sadly, the farther we go, these generations are going to have kids. And you know what I've noticed? More and more, parents don't want anything to do with their kids. Over the last 15 years, I've noticed it. You can ask every one of these teachers that are here. They notice it in the classroom. We have parents in camp that dropped their kids off at 6 and 7 in the morning, picked them up right at 5:29 and 55 seconds, and then complained when they came in that they had to take these ratty kids home. What kind of chance that kid have? When they get home and they just shut them in a room, whatever, leave me alone. Why have them? Give them up for adoption to someone that cares. It's sad. But this is where we are today. Because we just want pleasure and pleasure and pleasure. And oh, great, these consequences. Whatever. It's sad that we see it. We see it. They don't want anything to do with their kids. Not every parent, obviously. But you're seeing it increase. And it's sad. Who's going to teach them then? The system's going to teach them. The system is. Because mom doesn't care. And dad's nowhere to be found. And they're going to fall through the cracks, imbibe the philosophy, and then repeat it to a greater extent. And swallow all of it up. This model here. Now, by the way, Everett, a few notes about Everett. I love this guy. He's the governor of, anybody ever heard of him until now? Did you know that he was the main speaker at the Gettysburg Address? He spoke for 2 hours. And Lincoln spoke for 3.5 minutes. Which one do you remember? He must have been a preacher, right? I don't know. Anyway, he saw this model and he said, boy, this can work for America. We can change, this is literally what he believed and said, and you can look at his writings. We can change society through education. The parents aren't going to listen. We're going to get the kids. We're going to change society through education. He said, this is going to work. This is why free education for all children in public schools. Do you know where that came from? And you can read it yourself if you don't believe me. It's in the Communist Manifesto. Free education for all children. It's part of the Communist Manifesto because they know. You can't change a mindset in a society unless you get to the kids. And if parents are willing to give it up, then that's what's going to happen. I look at the importance of the parents. That's one first step. I'm never going to undermine a parent whatsoever as far as their choice for their children. When we did our distance learning thing and some parents, we're staying home, we're afraid. I said, no problem, we understand. Hope you have a great year, we're praying for you. If anything we can do, you come back and let us know. They're in charge of it. You know, it's we've got to get back to understanding the parents' involvement and trying to teach that to the parents as well. And then sadly, you have situations where the parents aren't involved. And then what do? You keep presenting the truth. And if we can continue to present the scriptures in Christian schools or whatever education and try to help the parents understand their role, they've got to step up. They have to do some things as well. But we've got to move on quickly. Here are some things that he did. I'm going to quickly finish up with him, with Horace Mann today. Here's what he did. As a secretary of the board, he began to travel. He said, I've got to convince Massachusetts to follow this system. So he traveled, and he would actually adjust his message to the audience. Let me read a few things for you. In a city like Boston, okay, very populated city, and population is increasing, jails were also increasing. So you know what he said? You either need to have more jails or more schools. Now think about that. He's intimidating the people. And we've heard this from under the Obama administration. This was in the legislation. They were trying to do this funding to make K-3 mandatory, two-year-old mandatory, we talked about last week, and even down, they want to get that kid cradle to grave. That's what they wanted. They literally said that. And you know what their argument was? You either let the government teach them or you put them in prison. Yeah, because government schools have such a great success rate? Are you crazy? It's not about keeping kids out of jail. It's about control. It's about getting a philosophy across so you can control them for the rest of their lives. They use these intimidating statements like that. Well, you can reject what we're offering, but you know your kid's going to end up in jail. Because the government schools is what keeps kids out of jail? You know what puts them in jail? Sin in their heart is what puts them in jail. A love for lawlessness is what puts them in jail. But oh, we've already denied God and denied the sin nature of man and denied the sin nature of children. So it must be that you idiotic parents aren't doing a good job. So give them to the government and we'll help you make them great citizens that'll never end up in jail. Let's just look back at the last 60 years and see how that's going. Then why has criminal activity increased? Why do we have lawlessness in the streets today? Because way back somewhere, we said, God's way isn't right. Kids don't have a sin nature. That's where it all started. And now we're seeing the fruit. So here's some things that he did. He would go to Boston, a populated city, and he would say that. And he actually said this. They called it common school. That's a public school. Is the greatest discovery ever made by man. Let the common school be expanded to its... This is what man said. Expand the public school to its capabilities and 9/10 of the crime in the penal code will become non-existence. The long catalog of human ills will be abridged. Man will make safely by the day and all rational hopes respecting the future would be brighter. Did that happen? No. 9/10 of crime and listed in the penal code will be eliminated because we don't have to worry about it anymore. Education without God does not fix the sin problem. God fixes it. Christ fixes it. And if I'm not teaching children about Christ and about sin and about their accountability to God, they're going to be criminal because it's in our nature to be lawless. It's in our nature to hate authority. You see the lawlessness going on in our streets today. I'm telling you, I wish someone with leadership backbone would get in there and clean that mess up and be done with it and say, this is law and order. Because there's right and wrong. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Redefine it. The good is evil and the evil is good. Good point. So in their minds, they don't see the problem. It's all peaceful. We've denied the only solution that works. We've thrown that out. God, the Bible, truth, coming to Christ in salvation, that fixes a lot of problems. We've thrown that out, so we've got to get, the government's going to do it. Education's going to do it. So when he talked to Boston schools or populated, give me more schools or give me more jails. When he talked to the liberals, he talked about the Hegelian state and dialecticism and appealed to their philosophy. He literally adapted his messages. When he talked to conservatives, you know what he said? This is literally what he said. He knew that conservatives, Protestants, like Christians, were concerned about the high number of Catholics that were coming into New England. And so you know what he said? He said, oh, well, it's a great way if we have this education, we can control the Catholics that are coming into the state. He's trying to appeal to every audience. With a socialist, he even said the few could control the many. So the socialists liked it. He tailored it to the patriots even. He would say, what a better way to foster our ideas than to have them all in school. So he changed his message to whoever. Well, what a politician. I mean, you know, it's like, you think the guy would be popular today probably. Then he wrote these 12 annual reports. It was part of his obligation. And he used this phrase repeatedly, the unwashed masses. The dummies. The masses of people that are blindly, just they haven't been helped. And we've got to get our schools in there and change this position for them. The unwashed masses, then he called boldly for compulsory. He said 3/4 of the private schools in the state should be annihilated. Because remember, who was in charge of the education before? The families. They would hire a teacher when it got to 50 families or 100 families. They would put a teacher in a school, and the families would pay for it, and they'd be done with it. We got to eliminate those and said our teachers, we should take the money and enroll our teachers into common schools. Get rid of all the competition of government schools. And he said there's a stigma with the charity schools. Now listen to this. You think you were in 2020. We've got to get rid of these charity schools and the family schools and things and put them in the government school because, you know, what we have in these schools is the rich people, they can afford to send their kids to that and have a teacher. But these poor kids, they can't do anything and they're just getting left behind. Am I listening to somebody today? That's what they've said for the past 20 years. You know, we gotta bring the poverty gap closer. We gotta close it down and make it smaller. We gotta have them all in the same opportunity. Moving on. He is the father of public education, a bold call for compulsory mandatory. And this is a paradigm shift in our country. A major point where the school, we're gonna end with this, is no longer an extension of the home. It's an extension of the state. This is a key moment in education history. And next week, so centralize it under state control and finance it through taxes. This is where it all started. Next week, we're going to look at probably a guy that did the most damage to the philosophy in those schools, and that's John Dewey. We're going to talk about his philosophy of pragmatism and how he brought it right into the schools. And it's going to be eye-opening. Remember the metaphysics and epistemology and axiology that we talked about a few weeks ago? We're going to look at what their views were on those things. And it was gobbled up big time. And it has changed this country. We'll get there next week. Father, thank you for the time. And I just pray we'd be wise in these days to follow your word and uphold your standards, Lord, and give us the strength to live according to your word, we pray in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you all for your good attention.